meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough joins me now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we discussing this week?
One of the programs of my organization, the Manitoba Historical Society, is a publication that comes out three times a year called Prairie History. Now, most issues are fairly general in their coverage of history. They cover, you know, various times and various places. But the issue that just appeared on bookstore shelves is a special one, dedicated to a single theme, the history of Prairie Aviation. Now, why? Well, because this year, 2024, is the anniversary, 50th anniversary indeed, of the Royal Aviation Museum of Western Canada here in Winnipeg, and it's also the 100th anniversary of the Royal Canadian Air Force. Now, I'm describing, therefore, the contents of this special issue in case any of our listeners would be liking to check it out for themselves.
I didn't realize the Aviation Museum had been around for as long as 50 years.
Well, it was founded in 1974, but it moved into its present building just 2 years ago. So, you know, you might not realize that it has been around as long as it has. It's immediately adjacent to the terminal of the Winnipeg International Airport, and it's a great museum, well worth a visit to see the vintage aircraft that are on display. Now, two of these aircraft are featured in articles in their special issue. One is something called a CF-104 Starfighter. It's a fighter jet from the 1960s when the RCAF needed something to counteract a perceived risk during the Cold War from the Soviet Union. Ooh, those bad guys over there. In our issue, a former RCAF pilot Gary Hook wrote about his experience flying a CF-104 at Cold Lake, Alberta in 1982. He reached Mach 2, or 2 times the speed of sound. Now, we do, though, reach back further in time to talk about a museum replica of a vintage Canadian Vickers Vedette biplane from the 1920s.
So it's a replica, not the real aircraft?
No. And what's interesting is that the Vedette flying boat that is on display at the museum was salvaged from the bottom of a small lake near the Paw after it was forced to make an emergency landing there in 1937. Now 40 years later, the remains were recovered, and over a period of years, it was carefully rebuilt into, well, in fact, it's supposedly an airworthy plane. They could fly it. They don't. In fact, they display it in the museum. They have no plans to fly it. But their Vedette sits with its bright yellow wings and its red bottom to its fuselage. It's really quite an impressive, beautiful-looking plane.
You described the Vedette as a flying boat. Can you tell us more about it?
Well, yeah. The Vedette was designed in Montreal to be able to take off and land from lakes and rivers, so it could operate in remote areas of northern Canada where there were no airfields. You didn't have the resources to build airfields all over the place, but you have waterways all over the place. And so, you know, a boat made a lot of sense. This enabled the Vedettes to be used through the 1920s into the early 1930s to create the very first detailed maps of the North. Now, as historian Hedley Auld describes in his article in the special issue, from 1924 to 1926, Vedettes were flown out of an RCAF facility at Victoria Beach. Now, everybody thinks of Victoria Beach as a summer getaway, but for a couple of years, it was the center of northern aviation. Now, what I found especially interesting was how the photographic surveys of the North taken from a Vedette were converted into topographic maps. Because you think about it, the plane is flying along and the pictures they're taking are not straight down. They're kind of at an angle. But if you use geometry, you can actually correct for that. And actually, that technique of taking oblique photos and turning it into maps was pioneered here in Canada to use that Vedette photography.
Very cool. Now, I understand there's an article in the issue about another aviation museum.
Right, because we do have two aviation museums in Manitoba, the one here in Winnipeg. Of course, in Brandon, they have the Commonwealth Air Training Plan Museum, another excellent museum that, of course, focuses specifically on aircraft used to train flight crews during the Second World War. What I found interesting there was that the article by Zoe McQuinn mentioned the museum's latest restoration project. Apparently, recently, an RCAF helicopter pilot who was on a training flight in here in Manitoba noticed on the ground the remains of, well, what looked to me like a pile of rubble, just like metal trash, really. But it turned out it was the remains of something called a Bristol Fairchild Bolingbroke. It was a Second World War plane that was used for things like maritime patrols and for training. But in this particular case, in 1946, after the war was over, the Bolingbroke was sold for its tires. Apparently, there was such a shortage during the war of tires that these ones were really sought after, and they didn't really want the plane, so it just sat there. So the museum has already made considerable progress. I saw the Bolingbroke when I was in Brandon a few weeks back, and it already looks much better than it did. I mean, they're still working on it, and eventually it will be a museum piece, but they're doing wonderful work in preserving knowledge of this critical time in aviation history. But speaking of metal rubbish, there's another article in the special issue that concerns Canada's first commercial air accident investigation, which took place at Portage la Prairie.
And when did that investigation take place?
Well, it was surprisingly much earlier than I would have guessed. You know, aviation was in its infancy after the First World War, yet in 1919, just a year after the war was over, there was a plane crash, and historian James Kostichuk talks about the accident. It was by a Canadian pilot who had served during the First World War. He was in Portage la Prairie to demonstrate some fancy stunt flying at the local fair. Unfortunately, him and his wife, along with a third person, they were headed for a show in Brandon, but soon after taking off, the plane crashed, killing two of them. Nowadays, if such a thing happened, the crash site would be quickly cordoned off so they could preserve the integrity so that the investigators could check out what had happened. But this accident was the very first one in which they didn't really have protocols in place, and so they kind of, well, developed them as they went along. And now, of course, we have this formal investigative process. But what I found especially horrifying is that curious portagers crowded around the crumpled remains of the plane, taking photos and, I think what's worse, collecting souvenirs from the wreckage.
What else is in the special issue, Gordon?
Well, there's articles about two noted people in Canadian aviation history. One is Punch Dickens, who is fairly well known. I've certainly heard of him. Probably many people have. But the other is a fellow who I suspect is completely unknown, except in very specialized circles, a man named Paul DeVood. He started a career in aviation with the Royal Air Force. Then he worked for Canadian Airways. That's the airline that was owned and operated by Winnipeg's own James A. Richardson, for whom our airport is named today. DeVood later flew planes in northern Canada for the Hudson's Bay Company before he served in the RCAF during the Second World War. He went on to hold several management roles in the Canadian aviation industry. The special issue also has reviews of three books on the history of the RCAF. Again, it's 100 years old this year, all of which can be downloaded for free from the internet. We have a few news items related to aviation history, including some commemorative plaques that are being installed by the Manitoba Historical Society around Manitoba at former sites of the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan. And there's an article about what I think is a really unique flight school that operated at Saskatoon between 1919 and 1922. All of its pilots in training were from China. Not the sort of thing you would necessarily think of happening in Saskatchewan, but it did. And, you know, that's just a brief overview of the material that readers will enjoy in this special issue. So I do encourage people to check it out to learn a whole lot more.
How can listeners who are interested in this get their hands on a copy of Prairie History?
Well, members of the Manitoba Historical Society can be assured that they will receive a copy as a benefit of their membership in the mail whenever that resumes. So we're hopeful that'll be sooner rather than later. But they actually can view the digital version of it right now. It's on the website in the members area of the Manitoba Historical Society website. In addition to that, if somebody becomes a member now, well, they will get that immediate access to the special digital issue. But we do sell physical copies of the magazine at retail, and listeners can purchase them here in Winnipeg, as well as in Saskatoon, at the stores of McNally Robinson Booksellers. So again, they're there. Go and check them out if you'd like.
And you have kindly bought two copies to give away to listeners right now.
I did. So if you really want a copy, there are two of them sitting right here in my hot little hands.
Thanks so much for that, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, many fine artists have lived and worked in Manitoba through the years. One whose paintings can be found in prominent places in Manitoba, including the Legislative Building, is Victor Long. We'll discuss Long's impressive legacy next week.
Well, Gordon, I won't be here next week, so I will see you in 2025.
Indeed we will, and I have lots more to say in the new year.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.